Hey guys, it's Dan and my good friend AJ in Florida with us today, and we're going to continue the second part of our series on time travel. And today is Thursday, February the 13th, day before Valentine's Day. Hey AJ, and it's around 9:30 a.m. here in Seattle Pacific Standard Time. Hey AJ, have you bought your wife a Valentine's Day gift yet?
Good morning, Dan. It's good to speak with you, and always nice to be on the show. I did this morning get a knockoff Michael Kors bag off of Amazon. Somehow that's legal to sell Michael Kors. It was $40, not too expensive. But
I've heard of Michael Kors. There's Michael Kors. There's George Michael Kors.
Isn't there? You know? I thought that it was my assumption. It was just Michael Kors.
I think it is, dude. I don't know shit about that.
I think you're right, because when I brought that up to my wife, I said, why are they allowed to do that? And she's like, oh, no, look. And she took me to the website, and it said michaelkors.com, and it seemed to be affiliated, but the whole operation didn't make sense to me. But what does in razzmatazz land? You know,
nothing makes sense. Nothing. It's like the virus. It's like the virus. I went by Harborview yesterday. Nobody in MOP 4 chemical gear, no crazy lines, no crazy old people with green phlegm coming out of their noses. No sign so far in Little Saigon of the virus. So I'm not saying it's not real, but if this time next month we're still talking about the virus but we haven't seen it yet, I don't know, man. I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you what your take was on that jump discontinuity in the affected that they released last night. They love releasing stuff at night and on Fridays.
So your question is, how did we magically go from f of x equals the square root of x to f of x equals x cubed?
Yes, overnight.
Yeah, overnight. Well, I think that's the magic of goal seeking. You know, I don't think that's truth. I think that's just the government finding numbers they think will make people feel okay. I really don't know, dude. This whole thing could be bullshit to make money. This could be bullshit to control the Chinese people. I heard a theory today that this was some kind of weird Israeli plot to guarantee war with Iran because, hey, we'll take out China first. There's so much fucking bullshit swarming around this. I have no idea what the truth is. I really don't. Me neither.
Me neither. It's terribly reported. You know, of course, so many lies, but just to have that blatant gap shows that they're either really dumb or liars, but and maybe a little of both. But we'll see as the days go on. I do like how you're at the Harborview checking up for us as a point of entry in Seattle to let the rest of us know if we need to start heading south to Tierra del Fuego.
But it's not very scientific, okay?
I appreciate anecdotal observations, because that's really all we can work with. But and it's true, though, with where you're at, the Asian population and a premier health system, you would see a spike if there was something going on. But
well, unless they're doing a good job right now of kind of keeping it under wraps. I mean, I don't really trust King County. I don't trust the state of Washington. I don't trust the city of Seattle. So is it implausible that they would conspire to shuttle sick people to some location just to pretend that, hey, no problem here, keep going to work, keep going over to Redmond, keep doing your jobs over to Amazon and Google, no problems? I truly don't know. The whole thing could be bullshit. It could be somewhere in between. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. It's so depressing.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's just, you know what I mean? It's like, am I being fucked with, or is this real? And if it's real, how bad is it? And if it were really bad, would they tell us the truth? This is why this is such a mind fuck, dude.
Yeah, I agree that they wouldn't tell us the truth, and they are capable of doing secret shuttles and moving people with all their they got all those military bases underground, things like that. But it just seems like so much smoke and mirrors, popping smoke, as you call it. Like the whole cruise ship story, they want to keep putting up there. Why would you quarantine an entire cruise ship with recirculated air? If it was real, everybody on that ship would have it by the time it's over. It makes zero sense. They have multiple exits on a cruise line. They can it just like they're fucking with it. Like you said, we can move on. Let's get to the bulk of it with time travel.
Okay. So, folks, in our last episode on the subject of time travel, we discussed mainly what it is. What is time travel? Has it ever been proven to exist? And again, You know, AJ and I had a really good back and forth about this. Today's subject, and we're going to probably spend most, probably all of today's episode on this, the main subject, is what is the present? Because my contention would be, and I think AJ would agree, that you really can't talk about time or time travel unless you can define what that moment is now, right now, this moment. And when I was going to school a long time ago, when we studied math and physics and science in general, we were taught kind of a Newtonian idea of time in the same way you think of motion. Like, you know, motion across the line is done in steps and there's an infinite number of points. Can you hear that ambulance, dude?
Yep. Check the hands on it. See who's inside.
Anyway, they're Asian. Okay. No, I don't. Yeah. No, dude. It's just the ambulance is like normally I'm on the fifth floor. Normally that shit isn't that loud. Fucking A. Anywho, thank you, Plague, for interrupting. I'm kidding.
Yes, you were saying about that.
That was probably just a gunshot wound, GSW. But yesterday when we did this podcast, AJ, you brought up Zeno's paradox in the context of how we measure motion and what is continuity in terms of infinity and the infinite number of points on a line. And you don't have to go over that again, but if you wanted to, we could discuss that. But the point is, when I went to school, they taught me a Newtonian classical definition of the moment, of the present. It is this infinitesimally unique moment. The universe has a universal clock. That was the Newtonian way of looking at the world for time and for specifically the present. Does that make sense, AJ?
Yes. And the analogy of Zeno's paradox as a way to begin to contemplate or wrap your mind around what that infinitely decimal small moment of the present is would be to ask yourself, if you're 10 feet away from a wall, 10 feet away from a wall, that's distance between you and the wall, and you walk halfway between you and the wall, you'll be, of course, 5 feet away from that wall. So your new gap is 5 feet. If you walk half of that new gap, the half of five, you're now 2.5 feet away from the wall. And if you keep going in increments of half of whatever the new space or gap between you and the wall is, the question is, the paradox, will you ever hit the wall? And some might say, well, of course you're going to hit the wall because you're going to bump up against it, taking your little ant-sized steps at the end when you're, you know, 1 inch away. How do you move only a half inch? And then, of course, it would keep going because it's keep going half and half and half. But in theory, you would never hit the wall. And if you had some insane stepper motor that could make these nano adjustments, of course, even then the nano adjustments would fall off because it would be too much. You would be able to start approaching that space between the wall, which is infinitesimally small. And that's how some would consider the present moment to be, just a wispy flash that can't really be quantified, but we can use estimations involving, we talked yesterday about the calculus and limits, and that can be used to extrapolate real world solutions in the Newtonian physics with cause and effect, because even though there's a little error in making that estimation, you're still going to get close enough to be successful in what you're trying to engineer. But relating to the present moment, there have been not only the Newtonian way to look at it, which works, hard tack physics is very helpful in many, many situations. But the other aspect is, well, how do you relate to that physical, to the present moment from a psychological perspective? And an analogy would be the difference in relativity, not necessarily special relativity, but the relative feeling of having your hand on a hot stove for a minute or talking to a hot girl for a minute and comparing what that felt like. Dan, what are your thoughts on bridging those two, the hard physics versus relative present moment, how that could be shifted around?
Yeah, and I think this is a good place to sort of, if only in a way that might seem unnatural, because I don't think it is natural, but this is a good moment to sort of separate two ways of looking at time and the present. And one way is this quote-unquote sterile scientific way. And the other way is in terms of what is the mental experience? What is the experience in terms of the mind, in terms of consciousness? Because with respect to the pretty woman or the hot stove, these things are happening in the world, but they're also happening in that mental space. And here's the other thing I'd say too. With respect to Zeno's paradox, what AJ defined is in fact the function f of x equals x divided by 2. And the thing is, no matter how small x is, as AJ pointed out, x will always be greater than 0. There is no way it can't be greater than 0. The limit process allows you to hypothesize 0, but 0 is never reached. And this, it's a weird conversation. I just wanted to leave it there because I would contend, and I think this does fold into the psychological feature of time, but I would contend that the present, as we understand it, is not a fixed point in time, either psychologically or in terms of physical reality, if we can even call things, you know, if we can even say such a thing like physical reality, because that's its own special topic. But what if the moment isn't really an infinitesimal? What if the moment is really a window of time, a window of time going into the future and the window of time going into the past? And we sort of stand in the middle of that. And so at certain points in time, the moment could be very brief and it could happen very quickly. But there are other times, for psychological reasons maybe primarily, that the moment gets stretched. Does that make sense?
Yes. And I'm really happy that you took that moment there to separate the two for the listeners, that we could look at time in the present moment in terms of the physics, and we covered that, and then moving into the psychological aspects of, could the moment be squishy, like wet paint drying, in the sense that it could be malleable, and perhaps this is why psychologically we do feel different effects when we're in a pleasant or unpleasant situation regarding how long it feels to experience it. You also directed me to look up the studies of a professor who looked at Native American, in particular the Hopi tribe out in Arizona.
Hopi.
Thank you, Dan. And they have a very interesting, they don't use past tense and future tense in the words of time, but they just look at one of my favorite things I took from the brief reading I did last night was they look at the next day, not as the next day, but just as the sun coming back up, and they're just right back at it. And without having any causality as far as linguistics go, to it being in the future or that yesterday was in the past, it's just that today's another day, and they're almost seem like they're always living in the present moment, which is why they never looked at the idea of time. But please patch that in if you have anything else to tie that back with.
Oh, absolutely. And so here's a good thing we were talking about yesterday with that podcast that got destroyed. But I think this is a good thing to talk about again, because it's great to talk about the same stuff twice, AJ. What if the moment exists across all of time? And the idea is this. If you can imagine the moment as kind of like a slow sloping hill, a very stable, slow sloping hill, kind of like a mountain or a hill you'd find in the Appalachians. It's an old chain, and you have these hills that are not so tall, but they have very gentle slopes. And imagine the moment is like being at the peak of one of these very slow sloping hills. And while all of time might be available in the moment, the deeper you go, the denser it gets. So at the top of the mountain, stuff might be kind of sandy, basically malleable. And that would be, you could call that core moment of experience, whether it feels like a second, a millisecond, a day, that space of time, that window of time, that moment is kind of maybe malleable and changeable. But the deeper you go, and in this sense, the deeper you go into the sense that the present exists across time, the deeper you go into the past or the future, frankly, the harder this stuff gets. In fact, with respect to the future, it doesn't even exist yet. So you might as well consider it a vacuum. And with respect to the past, it's just this material that just gets denser and denser. So even though theoretically according to this way of looking at the moment, you could experience the past as the present. It's just that it might be just physically impossible to experience it that way. Does that make sense?
Yes, I love that analogy about the mountain and the densities in considering the future, because it's considered when contemplating time, because that opens you up to this idea of the present being malleable because you're at the least dense part. So there could be some room for adaptation of it based on perhaps your thoughts, maybe something involving spinning materials, fluids, and physics. But there could be a lot to it where you are in those moments and it feels like there's a it's a fluid. It almost feels fluid because it's not very hard packed and dense like that bottom of the mountain from when you were 2 years old. That's so far back, you're not going to be able to see any causal effects from something that to be able to jump back to that would be impossible. But in the next 10 minutes, perhaps there is some room to move things around. And that's where your idea of the time clock radio is fascinating to me. I'd love if you'd and bring that in with the idea of it, of these less dense areas of time, the present, and how that would relate to potential manipulation using physics.
Well, okay. So one of the things that AJ and I have talked about is this idea that probably, and this is my basic contention, probably, unless you believe in the multiverse, probably it's impossible to really go back in time, at least not very far. But there might be wiggle room. Like, for example, imagine, and we talked about this in the previous podcast, but there's an abstract idea called the Tipler cylinder based upon the work of a mathematical physicist named Tipler, who believed that if you had a heavy, dense cylinder in space rotating at a high velocity, you could recreate relativistic effects predicted by Einstein. Or another way of putting it, you could create essentially a kind of homemade black hole. And the result of this effect would be ultimately to twist space-time and potentially to make it possible for, in the very least, photons to traverse from the past and from the future, depending upon angles of orientation and how you're picking up those signals. Again, this is all fucking abstract. I don't know that you can actually do this. This is kind of like, imagine if you could do this. Well, imagine if you could do this and you could start recording radio signals, and all of a sudden you figured the right way to capture photons from 10 minutes in the future. Well, so you build the cylinder, and let's say you get funding from Goldman Sachs, and you put the cylinder in orbit between the Earth and the Moon. It's top secret, and you start receiving signals, and you give Goldman Sachs 10 minutes on every other trader in the world, 10 minutes of information from the future. Now, I do think something like that could be catastrophic in a sense, but if it's done in the present as we defined it, which is to say that what if the present is more fluid, more open, and not just an infinitesimal, but actually a range of time, if that's the case, then maybe you can edit time, but just not that far back in time, or rather, maybe you can respond to the future without a paradox. Like, if I'm simply responding to probable futures, like imagine the future is either noise, signal, or something in between. That's the future. Well, the noise would represent people making choices at such a rate with such impact that there is no determinate future. It could be anything. And then signals where no matter what people do, this is what's going to happen. And then everything else is kind of in between. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. On the noise versus the signal, we would be looking at ways that you'd be able to bring out the signal and filter the noise, get the noise out of there.
Well, or rather, the noise is in this model, AJ. The noise is also a kind of signal. What the noise is telling you is that this is not a good place to make any trades. Like, let's say all of a sudden the next 10 minutes was noise. I would basically do no trades, or rather, I'd either hold off on trades or just do conservative trades, because the signal would be things are about to get fucking crazy, and the future itself is so unstuck that there's no reasonable way to make a bet. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so if it's pure noise, there's nothing you can do with it.
And we talked about one way, theoretically, would be like a time clock radio to bring in that data set, and then if you could aggregate it using your, I'm going to say topography, but I know that's wrong.
Topology, but we talked about it yesterday, and the thing is, we didn't really get into that. I'm not trying to be a jerk, but it's like, okay, so yesterday we talked about topology, and specifically in the context of, is there more than one mathematical interpretation of a physical event? Does that make sense, AJ? Like, can you have multiple mathematical systems be applied to the same physical event, and can they all be consistent?
Yes. Yeah, you could.
Mm-hmm. And so, exactly. And the thing is, I said, okay, well, there's a field of mathematics called topology, and it's a study of relations. And essentially, you could also call it graph theory. And I once believed you could reinvent most of physics using topology, and I don't think that's original. You could think of it in terms of lines of force. And in that context, actual location becomes irrelevant. That's the thing about graphs. The actual physical nodes themselves are abstractions of relationships. So there is no shape of a graph, so to speak. You might display a graph in a certain way so it's readable, but the graph itself has no shape. You know what I'm saying? So ultimately, you're talking about a physics that would actually demote location. And this is important. It would demote location as relevant. Like, location is less relevant than these lines of force. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's what I was connecting with the how we would interpret the filter out the
the spanning
and the trees, spanning trees. Yeah.
So spanning trees, for those of you out there, if you've studied topology, a spanning tree, a minimum spanning tree, for example, represents the graph that connects, the tree that connects every node, although a tree is technically a graph, but a tree that connects every node in a graph with the least cost or the least number of steps. And sometimes edges have values on them, so you'll use those values to calculate the cost. But the point is, the minimum spanning tree spans all the nodes with the least cost, either in terms of edges or the accumulated cost recorded on the edge. Does that make sense, AJ?
Yes. Now, I just had an idea with the spanning trees. And what if you were able to send out a signal or receive, excuse me, maybe send something out and have it bounce back against the ether, the atmosphere, and look at conductivity and use the spanning trees to see the paths. And that might start to give you some insight into where the information lies about the future, the past, future and the past, using those trees. And in addition, it could be the Tipler cylinder. It's just, for me, that's so abstract as far as feasibility.
Think black hole. Think black hole.
Yeah.
The idea is that a black hole represents such an exotic set of circumstances that both the special and the general theory of relativity apply. So it's not just that there's weirdness near black holes involving velocity, but there's weirdness near black holes involving mass, physical mass. So. Yeah.
And in our last recorded conversation on time travel that we put out a couple weeks ago, we talked about CERN and the Hadron Collider, and this is what I believe they're up to, somewhere along these lines. I'm not sure about their methods and everything, but that they're trying to break through and gain information on a quantum level about the world around us, and it could be applied to something like stock trading. Or manipulating the masses and what they need to put out and how much they can talk about the coronavirus without people getting out their pitchforks and gauge almost like a reader of the mass consciousness levels of frustration. And, okay, do we need to dial it down or can we turn it up? Or does Trump need to go out and talk about locking Hillary up? People need to hear that right now. And they can gauge all that from a quantum perspective, along with the internet. They use that, sure. But I think they have some other tools as well to gauge that, and which ties in with interpreting these quantum effects, such as entanglement, which you would, I think it'd be a cousin of to time interception. But,
well, I just want to hold, I want to hold on to one thing and just sort of like, and just revisit it again, but sort of focus on it for a minute. The idea behind this time receiver device, and let's call it a time, or call it a future receiver device. The idea is this, a device that would allow photons from the future to be received in the past. But the key thing is that the future is indeterminate, so it's not fixed. So these photons, they're going to represent all possible outcomes, not just the most likely, but also the most unlikely. And of course, in the moment, when the moment occurs, and I should rather say when the moment is in the past, when it's in the rearview mirror, all of this concretizes into the past, and it becomes what happened. It's no longer a question mark, assuming we know what happened. I mean, I don't want to get into propaganda or stuff around the Mandela effect, because that's its own special topic. But assuming an event happened, once it's in the past, that's when it becomes that kind of neutronium that you can't change, that no matter how hard you dig, you're never going to get to it in the experience of it. It's always going to be in the past. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the die would be cast into
the
a
die
level
cast.
Of density. It's cooled off and it's can't be changed. It's not
right.
Malleable.
Right.
There might be this window that we could be using the time clock radio to get in there and
I don't want to call it the time clock radio, dude, because it makes it sound like an alarm clock is going to wake you up at 6 a.m. and those are depressing, okay? So I don't want to call it the time. It's really just a future receiver, like a way of you know what it is? It's a way of receiving future events, you know, just receiving them, picking them up. And who knows how far into the future you can do this. I'm not sure there's a restriction. Like if we're talking about probability and not certainty, you see what I'm getting at? If we're talking about probability and not certainty, then it seems to me that there's probably no limit, maybe, except for the nonlinear facts involved, of what you could theoretically pick up.
I like that a lot, especially because when reading about quantum mechanics, it all deals with probabilities with their distribution functions. So that would really made up nicely with what I think they're doing at CERN with your time receiver, information receiver.
What if that's what they're doing? What if that's what they're doing? What if one of the things they're doing – I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, I'm agreeing with you. I think something along these lines is going on at CERN.
Right. So if they're doing this, then maybe they're getting the ability to take little snapshots of the future. And it doesn't mean they're getting a certain future. It just means they're getting kind of a distribution of probabilities. Like, you know, they're picking up things that are strong signals. And we could argue that that's the central tendency of history, like in statistical mechanics. There's a central tendency. You know what I mean? It's like when theoretical probability and empirical probability become one as n approaches infinity. As the number of experiments approaches infinity, the theoretical probability of I flip a coin and it's 50-50, that's theoretical. But the actual probability for any 10 coin flips, the empirical might be 40% because that series, it just turned out that way. Well, given enough coin tosses, this is what the law of large numbers says, the theoretical and the empirical should approach each other as n approaches infinity. And so what I'm saying is that if this time receiver were real, you would get a lot of things that approach the central tendency of likelihoods, which means you'd get a lot of strong signals, a lot of photons that have patterns. But you'd probably get a lot of shit that's just total fucking chaos.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because there'd be so much information, and that's where you'd have to
aggregate
it all.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no. That I'm agreeing with you in that we would have to be able to filter all the noise out, just keep the signal, but the signal might come through really heavy. So for example, what in my mind, what could have happened, I have no proof of this, just seems feasible that they may have been gauging the masses after 8 years of Obama, and they're like, okay, well, what do we need to give them if they're going to get upset and revolt? Well, here comes the actor named Trump, and to pacify people and placate them. And besides the internet and, of course, other ways that they spy on us, that something like this could be going on. But let's get – I just wanted to give an example of what I was thinking with the ways that they might do it.
Now, here's my question. Is this dangerous?
Well, potentially, depending on what you're –
If you could receive information from the future and if you could be – let's say – and I'm sorry for interrupting you, but let's say – you received information from the future, and it basically said that sometime next Friday, there was a 98% chance you would be hit by a car.
Okay.
And you know exactly where it's going to happen. Not precisely, but you know the town and you know the street. So all you need to do is be someplace else on that day, and you will not get hit by a car.
It could be potentially very helpful as well, like in the example you just gave. And I would be curious as to what would happen if once you receive the information that you're about to get hit by the car, 98% chance, and then you go out searching for the data again, would those odds immediately drop? Like, it seems like a paradox.
That's a scary question, because here's the thing. If you see it the way I do, the future, even if it's certain, this is the thing about certainty in the future. There is nothing certain. Even if you received a quote-unquote high probability signal from the future, it's still possible, because it's only a probability, it's not a certainty. It's still possible that that was never going to happen, that something else was going to happen. It was very unlikely. You don't have all the data. I mean, we're talking very cavalier about building some calculation function using spanning trees and other mathematics to figure out what's going to happen. But you and I both know, no matter how smart we are, we can't include every variable. And I know scientists will say, oh, well, ceteris paribus, all things being equal, and parsimony, we'll reduce the experiment to just the Earth. But the problem is, you can't do that. There are even things outside the Earth that could impact us. So here's my question. Even if you knew that there was a 98% chance that next Friday you'd be hit by a car on some street in some town, does that mean you're actually going to get hit by that car?
No, because I agree with you that the future has a probability aspect to it and nothing could be guaranteed. So even without the information, wouldn't difference. But would not be guaranteed. What are your thoughts on, once you have that information, what would you do to act on it? First blush, you would say, well, I'm not going to go to that street on that day. That's where I'd want to rerun the numbers after I had that thought. But what do you think? I want to hear
you. I don't know, because I have this terrible idea in my head that if we're talking about fate and not just science, then what if you decide, okay, I'm going to buy a ticket, I'm going to Hawaii, and then you recheck and you do another look into the future and you see that you drown in Hawaii on the same day?
Mm. Ooh. Yeah, well, now we know that we can't outdo God, which I agree with.
Well, no, I'm not saying – I didn't even bring in the G word, dude.
Well, I think that would be evidence of a higher power, right? I think you would have – I think if we could do all this, Dan, let's meditate on this for a second. If you could make this machine, run the probability, 98% chance I'm going to get hit on Little Saigon. So you book I like that. Go to Hawaii. Same thing, same time, different place. Wouldn't that prove the existence of God, that he just wants, you know, it's your time?
Well, here's my feelings, and I think you know this. I don't believe – because I believe in God, I don't believe you could ever prove his existence the way that you could if you were living in Eden. You know, when we were kicked out of Eden, we lost a lot of things. We lost cornucopia Earth. Earth is not a cornucopia. That was Eden. And we probably lost absolute certainty while alive that God exists. Are you still there?
Yes, and I also
did you see that connecting thing?
No.
I just got a connecting thing pop up. It's so much bullshit. Oh, my God. Ugh. Boy. I'm assuming that it's
I'm
not.
Saying, yeah. It says Daniel is recording the call.
I'm going to pretend that this is all bullshit and it just is working. But if this ends up folding again on us, we're going to have to come up with a plan C, because I don't like wasting your time, and I'm so sorry.
No. Well, let's do another 20 minutes, and then we can check it and see, you know, what happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it's okay.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. It's fine. It's fine. Oh, there it goes. It went away, so it's all fine. It's all good.
So we just can't talk bad about the
Don't talk the about it. If you don't talk about it, don't talk about them. If you don't talk about them, they don't see you. If they don't see you, they don't bother you. If they don't bother you, you don't die next Friday in a fucking car accident.
And back to that topic of dying, I don't think you can prove the existence of God. That might be part of the point of the whole idea of faith. But if you could do all these things, which we both agree are pretty far out there, that would be a pretty strong evidence.
I think that would be indication of something really strange going on.
Yes.
I think you could say this. I think you could say it was so strange and so exotic and so impossible that it leads you to believe that there's something else going on in the universe. But here's the thing. Let's say you didn't do that. Let's say you didn't go to Hawaii, dude. Let's say all you did was go to the same street, found yourself a coffee shop, and just sat inside. Because you know you get hit on the street, you don't get hit inside the cafe. And what's more important, you don't check. You don't go back and check again. In fact, you don't decide to check until you get past that date.
Okay.
I'm saying this because part of the issue is, how much damage could you do to time locally? Like, that's part of this thing. Like, if you could edit time locally in a way, or rather, if you could respond to the future with limited information, would that damage the present? Let's not talk about editing the past, because we're going to talk about that next. But assuming we're just listening to probable futures, if you start making decisions based upon that, do you think you can damage the present or the future?
Yes, you can. It depends on how much of a window you have and what your aims are. And the cafe example, you go to the cafe and you're trying to lay low and see what happens. And the ramifications of how we affect people, I don't think we even are fully aware of. We spoke last time about if you just pass them on the street, you don't even make eye contact or say hello, that still affects them in some way. And the idea of being able to know certain probabilities about the future, and then if you were to act upon them, we are assuming you're going to be acting upon this information, the probabilities, then.
Well, at first, honestly, at first, I would study it. I wouldn't act on it. I would simply, I mean, unless, of course, we're talking about I'm going to be dead next week, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But assume, you know what I mean? Assume it, we're just doing, all we're doing is picking up some type of Bloomberg feed. Some sort of a stock feed telling us the value of stocks and the NASDAQ and the Dow. Assume we're just picking up someone else's microwave feed and we're just studying it. Then we're not making any decisions. You know, well, that's not true. We're probably making decisions, but they're not decisions related to the information, okay? I don't think that's totally pure, but it's purer than, you know, going out and just trading on stocks the first time you get the data. You see what I'm getting at?
Definitely different levels, and even though you may not be making any actions, you're playing in the realm of quantum mechanics, and according to Schrodinger, by just merely observing these information probabilities could be affecting things from on a quantum level. So there are different gauges of how you would respond to it, and definitely a good idea to let the data come in for a bit and see what effects it's having just by observing it.
Well, the thing is, I kind of think this is the equivalent of seeing further down the road. So I personally don't think this is – I don't classify this as cosmologically dangerous. I would classify this as potentially locally dangerous. Like if you all of a sudden had a bunch of people doing this, not just, you know, people observing it, but actually making decisions based upon these glimpses of the future – I think you could end up, you know, causing tremendous havoc, but it would be local. Okay. It would result in damage to the earth or to the human race. I don't think it would do anything more than that.
I agree. Yeah, it wouldn't.
You know, now, that's not like saying, can I go into the past and fuck with things? That, you see, this is where I draw the line. Even if you're just talking about a few seconds into the past, you're talking about a space that is either on its way to cooling off. I mean, think of the present also in terms of temperature. Like you could think of the present, the actual present, as the hottest moment in the universe. Does that make sense so far?
Yes.
Like the present is the hottest moment in terms of causality. That is where all the activity is. Even on a boring day, the present is where all the shit is happening. And that's why when you think about something like Schrodinger and Schrodinger's cat and superposition and how you interpret that, one way of interpreting it is in terms of, well, the cat could be alive and the cat could be dead. Another way of looking at it is the way you would think about, well, to some extent, almost like forming clay and then heating it in a kiln, okay? Mm-hmm. Once it's been formed and once it's been heated, it's in the past. It's done. It's been done. It's done. It's over. But in the present, it's still hot. It's also still kind of squishy. And it's hard to say what might be possible in the cauldron of the present. It is the hottest point in the universe. It always has been, always will be. But everything else is cooler. Behind us, it's the, you know, events cooling off and becoming the past. And to the future, it's almost irrelevant to think in terms of hot or cold, because the future really doesn't exist. I mean, not in any real sense. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I really like the analogy of a, say, a molten metal that would be the present, and that's where you can do the most with it, of course.
Yeah.
And hot, but once it's cast, then it becomes that bottom of them, starts to form those solid layers of the mountain.
But notice, AJ, we're talking in terms of something that in no way would we say is like an infinitesimal point.
No, definitely not a point. And is that where you're connecting it back to the entanglement and the cat? Is the Schrodinger's cat?
Well, no, the Schrodinger's cat issue has to do with the idea. Okay, so this is related to interpretations. One interpretation of Schrodinger's cat is that there's a multiverse and that Schrodinger's cat is alive and dead. That's an interpretation. One interpretation of superposition is that the cat is alive and it is also dead. And that's it. That's all there is to it.
Okay. But we both don't like the multiverse.
So. Well, I'm not a fan. I don't care if you like it. I am not a fan for religious reasons, but also for philosophical reasons. I'm not sure it makes as much sense as other people think it makes. But that being said, okay, whether the multiverse is real or not, one interpretation of superposition is that the cat is alive and the cat is dead. Another interpretation is that the cat is alive and the cat is dead until you open the door. Once you open the door, it's alive or dead exclusively. It's not both. You follow me?
Yeah, because before that, it's a probability. And then
that's the future, okay? Yeah. That's my point. Superposition, in my opinion, might be a philosophically flawed concept, because what they're talking about isn't really two or more things that could coexist in contradiction. What they're really talking about is the difference between the future and the present and the past, okay? In the future, the cat, you know, hell, we don't even know what the cat's doing in the future. In the present, we think it's either alive or dead. Once we've verified, once we've gone through those steps, it is alive or dead. It's not both.
Yeah, and I agree with the latter interpretation of it. I was thinking by us observing the future, even though it's still in a set of probabilities, so it's the cat is still in the box because it's a probability, you don't know if it's alive or dead, that would, by you then, I'm cycling back to where I was wondering what would happen once you know that information. Like, would you go to that street on the day you think you're 98% likely to die?
Well, okay.
How that starts affecting things.
Okay. Why don't we keep things real fucking simple? Think about Schrodinger's cat. Okay. You've got the box. You have the isotope releasing alpha and beta particles. You have the radioactive detector. You have the poisonous fucking vial. You close the door. The fucking safeties come off. The isotope releases particles. The detector has a probability of receiving one at some point, really. And then the gas gets released. But you don't know any of this because the door is closed. Okay? Mm-hmm. The door is closed. You have zero knowledge. In fact, this is also one of the problems I have with quantum mechanics. They posit the existence of no knowledge as knowledge. You follow what I just said? Like, this idea that the cat could be alive and dead. What if there's a third state? What if there's a fourth state? The problem with these overly simplistic ways of looking at superposition is that they assume that the probability of something is the same as the existence. You follow me?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. And I have a lot of issues with quantum mechanics as well. And that's one of them. I'm agreeing with you that to go through and in relation of the cat and the time travel, not time travel, but the future information and what kind of spooky effects, because I do believe in some of those spooky effects they talk about, and the super, not one of them being that the cat is alive and dead in the multiverse, but that there's that information you're receiving in terms of probabilities could be useful in helping you make in informing your decision process, like to go save the cat. But of course it's in the black box, but back I'm on the time receiver of information.
Well, no, we can talk about the time receiver. My point is, let's say you had the time receiver as part of your cat experiment, okay?
Yeah, that's good. I'm trying to connect the two of them together, but I can't.
Well, that's okay, because we're going through this because, you know, it's a weird conversation, and if we have the same luck we had yesterday, this wonderful conversation will cease to exist in approximately 20 minutes.
It's going
to
be here. It's going to be here.
Yeah, we'll see, okay?
Love you, Microsoft. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my God. So, just said the wrong fucking word. You said the bad word.
I said I love you.
The red color. The red color. You did the red color in the village. Now the murder's gonna happen.
My favorite software person. Okay, Dan. Let me try.
No, here's the point though. Can I just finish this thought though?
Yes,
please.
Yes.
You've got the Schrodinger's cat experiment, and you also have the time receiver. And the time receiver is tuned to about, let's say, a half an hour in the future. You got it at a low power level. And you're receiving possible futures just locally for the lab. And your system tells you that once you close the door, you turn it on, and it tells you the cat is dead. Because here's the thing. The way the Schrodinger's cat experiment set up, the cat is most likely dead. Because it's just too high a probability that a particle will be received by the detector. At least that's one version of the experiment. So the cat is most likely dead. And guess what? Your time receiver basically has a very strong signal around different possibilities, but it filters down to the cat is dead. Mm-hmm. Well, then you open up the fucking door, and what do you find?
A dead cat, but what?
Maybe, probably, right? But you won't know until you open the door, is my point. Even with that information about the future, that is, to me, the definition of superposition. Superposition is an expression of the simple fact that we only have likely ideas about the future. We do not have certain ideas. That, to me, is superposition. And that is why its quantum interpretation, in my opinion, is a little bit squishy and problematic. I'm not really sure it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And so what if you use that information – well, they had the alpha detector to go in there and save the cat. It went off, and then doesn't that flip when you open it up, though, the cat still could be dead, though. Yeah.
Well, that's my point, though.
Yeah, it's, I get you. Mm-hmm.
Unmade. You know, we're having conversations about something that does not exist. That's basically my argument. No matter how strong the signals are, and listen, this receiver might have really strong signals. No matter how strong those signals are, it's still the future. It does not exist.
And they say that nothing is information. In what terms are they? Could you go over that one more time, please?
The idea that you can draw the conclusion that somehow the statement the cat is both alive and dead is something that you can derive. That you can derive that. You can say, based upon this thought experiment, you could conclude that the cat is both alive and dead. Well, why are we concluding that? Why are we saying that we can say that? You see, that's the thing about thought experiments. Thought experiments, in my opinion, can be dirty tricks too, and a little bit of rhetoric, because they sometimes lead you down a road. It's sort of like the Milgram experiment. If you don't break it down, you don't realize why it's flawed. And this is the same thing. If you don't break it down, you don't see its flaws. They try to tell you that it is indubitably the case that the cat is both alive and dead. That is the statement they say. But why? How do you know that? How can you say that? That doesn't make any fucking sense from my perspective.
No, it doesn't. And
I can say, listen, in the future, AJ, Dan Sullivan is either alive or dead. I'm going to let you know a little secret. Tomorrow, I'm either alive or dead. I am. That is a true statement.
That's true for everybody.
it's true for everyone, but I'm going to be all self-centered and shit and talk about myself, and I'm either alive or dead tomorrow. And even if I have this time receiver and it tells me there's a 99% chance that I have a heart attack tomorrow, I got to be honest with you. I'm still just either alive or dead. Now, is that superposition? Or is that the simple reality that until it becomes the present and then the past, it's hypothetical, it's likelihoods, it doesn't exist?
Yeah, it's definitely in terms of likelihood. And they do use a lot of those waveform functions. Because I'm not a huge fan of the Schrodinger's cat experiment, too. It seems like redundant, like you said, a trick of rhetoric. But then there's aspects of that quantum mechanics involving those wave functions that of the relativistic effects that can be very interesting. That if you were then to take the information, like Dan's going to have a heart attack, but something's going to happen to you tomorrow, to then use that to affect the probabilities would be the most useful thing you could do, obviously, with the time clock, the time radio. Don't call it radio is a receiver. I just wanted to point that out earlier.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to be a jerk. It's just that
I'm not either. I
honestly got so annoyed that we had to do this again because we did this so well yesterday, and the motherfuckers in the world, which we're not going to talk about, destroyed it. But that being said,
I'm still going.
It's fine, but my point is very simple. The cat is not both alive and dead. The cat is exclusively one or the other once you open the door. And of course, there are people who would say, well, of course, that's what superposition says too. That's, you know, collapsing the wave function. That's when the wave of the particle becomes either the wave or the particle. But this is all fucking supercilious bullshit. The future is unformed. That is what, that is why Schrodinger's cat can either be alive or dead. That is why asking questions about the location of an electron as it's orbiting an atom is kind of pointless, because A, they move so fast, and B, we're talking about the future, not the present. We're talking about something that might happen, not something that already did happen. And I'll even go a step further. When it comes to quantum mechanics applied to the microcosm, we're talking about realities that are so exotically separate from our reality that the conversation itself is pointless. I mean, we're talking about particles so small, AJ, that the coronavirus looks like Jupiter compared to an apple. If you're holding an apple, and even then that relationship is wrong, that Jupiter is still too small and the apple is still too big. My point is, when you talk about things like subatomic particles or you know, that fucking the God particle, Higgs boson, stuff like that, these are abstractions that are so removed from our physical experience that anything we apply to them beyond mathematics becomes kind of ridiculous, and even the math is kind of ridiculous. So that's where I'm coming from, dude.
I would absolutely agree with you.
And Tesla would agree too. Yeah. Tesla would agree too. He would say, if you're going to do an experiment, it needs to be something someone else can reproduce. And if your theories don't have an experiment, Tesla would say, you're just playing games with numbers.
Yes, which is very easy to do. You can start with 2 = 2 and just start throwing variables on both sides to make it look super cluttered and confuse people. But you can reduce it all back and somebody can say, oh, it works out. Well, 2 does equal 2. But using systems or just equality properties, you can create these monstrous, intimidating looking equations with logarithms and trigonometry and calculus and all that. And it could work out like a game, but it doesn't mean it's relevant to anything that from an experimental point, as Tesla says. And to put a capstone, I very much agree with you that the future is a set of probabilities that have not happened, but that's it. It's just a sample space of certain outcomes that could occur with probabilities. But that's not necessarily quantum mechanics. That's just probability.
Yeah, but here's the thing. And I want to leave it here, because when we talk about the moment, and the key thing today was to say, and I'm sorry, AJ, if I've been a little grouchy, but the key thing today is that the moment is probably not the way Newton described it. It's probably not an infinitesimal, if only for psychological reasons, okay? This fleshy computer, this chunk of fat in our fucking bone cave called a skull, it doesn't do things in digital ways. It does things in analog ways, in extended ways, in deeper ways. And these ways are not instantaneous. So this entire idea of the present being some infinitesimally tiny point in time where you could say Dan is either alive or dead is silly. That's number one. And with respect to this question. And then I would say number two is this, that much of, in my opinion, okay, well, let me put it this way. Number two is this, that one of the problems with superposition and the interpretation of superposition, meaning the multiverse, is that they want to do this. And this is important, AJ. They want to convince you that the future is probable. So is the present, which again, we both think this is squishy, the present's squishy, okay. And so is the past. That's the multiverse, dude. That's why they want you to believe that Schrodinger's cat is alive and dead. Because once you believe that, then you kind of have to admit there are two cats. There's not just one. And then you have to admit that maybe there's an infinite number of cats, which means there's an infinite number of chains of causality, which means that the future, the present, and the past, they are all probable. Nothing is certain. You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I don't like the multiverse at all, because I feel like what they're doing with the multiverse is using language tricks to have someone say, oh, yeah, in the future there's possibilities, so why couldn't it be taking place not only – I went to the McDonald's and I also went to Burger King in this other universe, because those were two places I was thinking about going to lunch today. But that's just it's just probabilities. And then I see how they shift that into the present and then the past, and all of a sudden, well, it to get to the present and the past, well, now we have to have the multiverse. But you started off in the future just thinking about probabilities like a middle school student, and all of a sudden it turned into this destruction of higher power. So, yeah, very well done dissection of that. I've never been a huge fan of that experiment. It's not my favorite quantum experiment.
Well, no, but yeah, but like what you're saying, and what and this is the thing, it's not even just about religion or God, because I don't even want to say that's the point of this. We're trying, as much as possible, these conversations about time travel, we're trying to keep God out of it because we're trying to focus on the science. But the multiverse, once you buy into it, it does have this acidic effect upon this notion that human life has value. Like, if you believe in the multiverse, there's an infinite number of AJs, and there's an infinite number of Dans, and we'll have an infinite combination of weird conversations, most of which will coalesce around a central tendency, which means that we'll probably mostly have the same conversation, and maybe this time the recording works, right? If we're lucky. Oh, the gods of probability, help us here. But that's the thing. If you believe in the multiverse, if you believe in this interpretation of Schrodinger's cat thought, if you believe in the interpretation of the Schrodinger's cat thought experiment that says the cat is alive and it's dead, then basically you're stuck with this idea that your life has no meaning, that you really don't have free will, that whatever choices you're making were probably determined, and the only thing you can honestly say is that there might be another version of you that made a different choice, but as far as your life goes, every choice you made was determined. Everything that happened was going to happen. That's the other side of this. Some people will interpret Schrodinger's cat and superposition as almost like a half-assed proof of free will. I'm going to let you know a little secret. It isn't. It is the opposite. What it basically is saying is that everything that happens within any given chain of causality was 100% determined to happen. It might be determined to happen in n number of ways, but it doesn't matter if it's been determined to happen in n number of ways. You'll only ever experience one way, ever, period. And it will only ever turn out that way for you, ever, period. So there is no free will in the multiverse.
That's the antithesis of free will, but they play – that's what they do, those semantics. They love to do that. I agree with you. We should not bring God into – keep it on the science for now. But it just does irritate me when I start to realize another way that they – damaging children, because they teach this in schools, and you know, along with evolution, which we could do a podcast on that. I'd love to do that with you, because I have a lot of thoughts on evolution.
Well,
and
it
just destroys
that.
People's beliefs, and that's uncalled. I can't help but say I disapprove strongly of that. But let's get back and we'll wrap up.
We're gonna wrap
this
up.
One, yeah,
because we gotta fucking. We don't want to push the fates here.
No.
And I looked into my time receiver this morning. They told me that if I was on a call past 10:45 a.m. today, there was a 96.3% chance that a hooker would give me crabs. And there was a side probability of 85% that a monkey with herpes would bite you, AJ.
Oh, yeah.
So we have to end this before 10:45 a.m. And before we end it, I just want to say thank you, AJ, as always. I'm sorry I was a bit crabby. I think I was, and a bit short. I just frankly got really pissed off because we had such a good conversation yesterday and it got nuked. That this won't be fine. And for all
No,
you
you were
listen,
not angry at all. It was really nice to speak with you again. I
it's
love the time travel
frustrating.
stuff.
Can we just talk
But
about this? It's frustrating to go over the same conversation twice, don't you agree?
it is. When I was a teacher, I had to teach the same thing in the same day, sometimes six times. And by the fifth or sixth, I'm just like, oh, fuck. I didn't have the same enthusiasm. So it was disappointing. And then especially to do the cast yesterday and then have that post-traumatic effect of, well, is this one going to work? And what are we just going in the same loops? But I appreciate you looking at the different options. And we got my I'm on the laptop now. So in the future, we'll probably keep doing it this way. But it was a great speaking with you, Dan, as always.
Okay, and before we go, I just need to do the pitch. Listen, folks, the virus is destroying half the world's population. The nuclear war is going to kill the other half. But what about me and my hookers and cocaine? Now, what I would say is this: you might not believe in hookers or cocaine. You might say, Dan, I'm happy to send you money for food, water, and shelter. Well, here's the good news. I always take care of food, water, and shelter first, just like you should. If you've taken care of food, water, shelter, if you've taken care of the people you love, the people you care about, if you bought your loved one a Michael Kors handbag online, and guess what? Half off from the Wuhan plant, half off, 50% off from Wuhan. If you bought that, I'm just saying there, AJ.
Probably where
If you've done all your spending for everyone you love for Valentine's Day, all the hookers and all the mistresses and your wives and everyone else, and you've gotten all your stuff taken care of and you still have money left over, then you can donate to my podcast, assuming this podcast goes up, because there's no problems. And I'll have a link to Venmo. Go
Sorry,
ahead.
when's the benefit, for the
The
hookers and
telethon.
cocaine?
The
Yeah,
telethon.
telethon.
Okay, I'm thinking about doing just as, yeah, I'm thinking about doing a telethon and using my YouTube account, my Charlie Vegas YouTube account for a telethon, for cocaine and hookers. And I know there are people out there who think that that's in bad taste. And well, go ahead.
I think you need to enjoy your life, Dan. You're in Little Saigon in the throes of a black plague, bubonic plague, and you've got to go out with a bang. So I was asked, I would like to know when it's going to be. I'll be
I
there
haven't
at the
picked
bank.
a date yet. I haven't picked a date, but
Okay.
it may be right around my birthday.
And Charlie Vegas, was he the one that lost his first love in a Tesla? Was that Charlie?
I think
That was,
maybe,
I
but
think
Charlie
that
Vegas, that's a story,
was.
but there's a
Wait,
link
what
to it.
happened?
Charlie Vegas is out there somewhere, I think. I think he got his ass kicked because he was picking up girls one night and he just said all the wrong things. But you know, he's still out there and he's got a YouTube channel. But my point is, maybe around my birthday. Maybe we'll do it around then.
Okay.
Okay.
And when is your birthday?
It's next month. That's as much
Okay.
as I'll say right now. It's
All
later in
right.
the I don't want to give away too much information because
Okay, fair
if
enough.
this telethon's gonna happen, I don't want the system to shut it down. I don't
I
want
don't think
man to
that means
shut
they're
down a telethon for cocaine and hookers. Because there are people out there saying, why aren't you doing one for the kids? Listen. Those kids got Sally Struthers. Who's going to help me with my cocaine and hookers, AJ?
That's all they need. And speaking of cocaine and hookers, got a text this morning that Glimbus 12 had a rod shoved through his input output port, so he was not able to make it today. I'm sure he told you about it as well.
Oh,
Very tragic.
you know, he's been living rough down in Pioneer Square.
Oh.
I saw him the other day. It's like a lot of his wiring was all frayed. A couple burned out chips, and it looked like he had some lipstick on crooked, and somebody been treating him like his own personal bitch. So he's been doing some bad stuff down by Pioneer Square. Glimbus is bad. You know, it's time traveling toasters. I think it's like 2087, but it's not. It's not. It's 2020. And if you go down to Pioneer Square looking like a fucking robot toaster, you're going to get a metal rod shoved up your butt. That's all I'm saying. Okay?
Oh.
Are we clear? Are we clear on this?
Yes.
If you're ever a robot, AI, in Pioneer Square, don't go there. You know what I'm saying? Don't want a rod. Anyways, the point is, I've got links to Venmo and PayPal in my SoundCloud description of this podcast. I also have one on my SoundCloud homepage at imsully.com. And for Thursday, February the 13th, Valentine's Day Eve, good morning, good night, good afternoon. And again, thanks, AJ. And we'll talk next time, next episode, about time travel.
Thank you, Dan. It was nice to be on the show, as always. Thank you.
Okay, cool.